Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Stop in the name of love before you break my heart.
Take it over.
It's actually very good lyrics. This style does sometimes break hearts.
It breaks hearts, maybe even friendships. How's it going, everybody? What's up? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. What are we talking about today, Jimmy?
Today we have a very fun topic with a very fun guest. It is all about... You know, we've talked a lot about deck building, how to win, how to politic, but we haven't really spoken much about how to stop your opponent from winning and secure victory for yourself. And it's also going to make you a better player overall, I believe. So, of course, to do that, we're going to need a special guest, someone that, is, if you've watched Extra Turns, knows a thing or two about stopping the opponent from winning. Please give a warm welcome to the one and only Jesper Ising.
Hi, everyone. It's nice to be back. I look forward to doing this thing with you.
It's kind of Jesper month on the Command Zone, as we talked about, because we have a lot of stuff going on, including the Extra Turns episode, which if you haven't watched it, just came out, I believe, a week and ish ago. Yeah, now. No spoilers here, but Jesper does have some very interesting tactics that we will be talking about today. But before we get into that, Jesper has also contributed something amazing to the Command Zone, and that is a playmat called Epic Play, and Jesper did the art for it. And in fact, Josh, I believe we have something special for our viewers today.
Yeah, so... Jesper, despite being a amazing commander player, is also a world-renowned artist.
Yes.
But Jesper, we've done something special here. I don't think you've seen this yet.
Yeah?
We have...
Show me.
Yeah, we've animated the new playmat art in the game night style.
The art
was just too good. I was like, we have to animate this thing because it's so sweet. So, well, this is going to be the world premiere of the animation for the Epic Play artwork. Take it away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sick.
So,
can we do that for every single piece of art on the planet? Because that was awesome.
Yeah, I'm sorry to our audio-only listeners because they're not getting the full effect here. They just heard some stuff. If you're watching this on YouTube, though, you're looking at the playmat right now. This is definitely like Jesper's signature style.
Yeah.
Has a very clear, clean, like, figure, character, couple of characters in the middle. It's just beautiful. The Kickstarter for this playmat is going on right now. We're going to have the links in the show notes. It's a limited time only thing. That's how Kickstarter works. So at the end of the Kickstarter campaign, this playmat will no longer be available. We're only making it this one time. So if you want to get your hands on it, and trust us, you definitely do,
yep,
make sure to go into the show notes below this video and click on that link and secure your order sooner rather than later. You don't want to wait, forget about it, come back, and then the Kickstarter is over.
Yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you get this Kickstarter before it ends. We're also going to have it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of those places. So you'll be able to find the links. And of course, Jesper, the art that you did for this, I'm not joking, man. This is one of my favorite art pieces I think I've ever seen in Magic. It's custom to this playmat. You don't want to miss out.
Yeah, I was once told that my art looked like candy wrap paper. And I think the guy who said it, I think he meant it as an insult. But I took it to heart, and I was like, "Damn right, I'm gonna take that into it. I'm gonna make that a style."
I love it.
I love your style because like the main characters really pop in your style. It's there's never any trouble like figuring out the focal point. And really, one of the great things about this playmat is even from pretty far away, you can really make out the dragon and the dragon rider and get the feel of the piece. Even if you're not right next to it, which, you know, not that artwork that's very busy can't be good, but this I don't know, there's just something about the way you control the perception of the viewer so well.
And the colors. I love the colors. It's just like candy wrap paper, right, Jesper?
Yeah. This is a Mars bar turned into a dragon.
All right. Before we get into the main topic here, we got to talk about our sponsors, cardkingdom.com/command zone. You know, Double Masters just came out. Zendikar Rising's on the horizon. We've got all kinds of sets that have come down the pipe lately. If you're like us, you're behind. I haven't even opened a single pack of Jumpstart. I don't even own a Jumpstart card, like a single one right now. I need to go to cardkingdom.com/command zone and order those cards. And they are the best. Not only in like the way they grade the cards, they're going to come in very good condition. They also just get you the stuff so fast. So Card Kingdom is the one I trust if I need that card or want that card, you know, very soon for like if I'm going to play on Spell Table or something tomorrow night. Card Kingdom is the only place to go because they're going to get it to you when they say they are.
Yeah, and their customer service is top-notch. They're immediately responsive. They also will sometimes include little, like, custom arts if you ask them, like, silly requests. Yeah, so they're really great. We've been working for them a long time. Another awesome sponsor of the show is Ultra Pro. In fact, we trust Ultra Pro so much that every single playmat we've ever sold has been printed on Ultra Pro because they just have the absolute top-quality playmats for the game. It's the way to protect your cards, both in style and safely. Not to mention, we have something in front of us here that I've been waiting for a long time, and it's the new Eclipse sleeves that have glossy fronts so that your foils and everything, or card arts behind it, are going to shine right through and they're going to look brilliant, especially if you have Jesper Eising art cards in your deck.
Yeah, I know a lot of people had small complaints about the original Eclipse sleeves in that the translucent side of the sleeve was a little bit milky and it would tend to dull the colors on your card, especially like foils and stuff like that. These are the ones that really show off the vibrancy of your cards. So the Pro Gloss sleeves are new from Ultra Pro and really, really sweet. In fact, am I going to have to change all like 25 of my decks to Pro Gloss sleeves now?
I actually like the matte on some of my decks, but I do have a couple blinged out decks, and I'm sure DJ will agree with me here, that need to be seen in their full glory.
Okay, I like that take because that's just less resleeving. Because all my Eclipse sleeves are still good. Like, they don't break ever, so I don't want to like, what am I going to do with the old sleeves? So maybe I'll just resleeve like 5 of my decks.
There you go. Yeah. The ones that have, you know, like your Vile Smasher Thrasios, fully customed out, blinged out deck.
I want to talk about one more cool thing from Ultra Pro because they've got a new collection called, they're calling the Mythic Collection. It's these new deck boxes and they're super classy. They've got like stitching and very high quality, and the magnets are like super strong. So they've got different size deck boxes. This one holds 2. Jimmy's got one that holds 1, but also has room for like dice and stuff.
Yep.
So the Mythic Collection from Ultra Pro, also very snazzy, very classy, new product from them. All right, and finally, the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. You get all kinds of perks and rewards. One thing you get is to watch game nights, extra turns earlier than the general public. Also, those are ad-free versions of those shows, so you don't have to deal with ads. And also, we shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Marcos Luvano.
Marcos. You rock.
All right, let's move right into the topic, stopping your opponents from winning. Now, we often get lots of emails where people are having trouble winning, or statistically, they feel like, I'm just always losing in Commander. And here's the thing, you're usually losing in Commander when there's 4 players at the table. What that means, though, is that one of your opponents is actively winning. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons as to why you're losing. And people often blame it on, the power level of their deck is too high, or they just have better cards, their card quality is better, so I can never beat that. But I think the real reasons might be a little more nuanced, so let's dive right into it. Jesper actually brought this up, and he said that he was influenced by Melissa DeTora, who was on a Game Nights episode. And Jesper, do you want to talk about what I'm calling the Melissa DeTora effect?
Yeah, sure. When I saw that gameplay on that episode, I went home and built that deck right away and tried testing it out and piloting it.
A lot of people did that, evidently.
Because it seems so fun to play. But when I saw the deck list and I started collecting all the cards from my binders, I noticed there was cards that I was curious about why at all she would play them. I thought it was stupid to include cards like Stony Silence in the deck.
Oh.
So
what was your thought when you saw Stony Silence? Why did you think it was bad?
Because it stops your soul ring, your own soul ring. And the other card I noticed was Ground Seal. And when I saw that, I was like, this is so conditional. I'm never playing cards like that. This is stupid to play. And then I kind of thought, Melissa is not stupid. It might be me that's stupid. And then I start looking more into it. And it dawned on me that you might include small cards like that that are very conditional, but that will do a lot of damage to a single deck strategy. And that might be okay.
Yeah, and they actually did do a lot. If you guys watch the episode, and we'll maybe show a clip here, Stony Silence stops Professor from equipping Swiftfoot Boots onto his commander and dealing what could be a ton of damage, maybe even lethal commander damage. So in that small instant, you're right, it does turn off a Soul Ring, but in Melissa's deck, obviously, it's going to draw her a card being an enchantment, but it shuts down other people's cards, sometimes more than your own.
Yeah, let me read Stony Silence for those that don't know it. It's one in a white for an enchantment. It says, activated abilities of artifacts can't be activated. It doesn't like exclude mana abilities too. That's just mana rocks are turned off. And the reason it doesn't allow Professor to equip the Swiftfoot Boots is because equip is an activated ability. So yeah, interesting to sort of have the realization that, you know, a narrow card could still be really good just because when it's good, it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah. And then I also figured out, if it hurts you or if it's not very good to play at that moment, just don't play it.
Right.
Then it's just a wasted card in your hand, and that might also be okay. But if it's good and if the condition is right and you're up against an artifact deck, this is just a fantastic card.
Yeah.
So I started looking into cards that might do the same kind of thing to an opponent, and I slowly started adding Rest in Peace into decks and noticed how devastating an effect it has.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just that, but you actually showed off a deck that you built that was kind of influenced by Melissa's deck, right? On the most extra recent episode of Extra Turns. Can you describe to us what that deck is and what made you to build it?
Yeah, it's a Hate Bear deck, and it has Thrasios and Timna as the commanders. And what I like about Hate Bears is that they're still creatures. They can still attack. You can still do a lot of damage, but they will influence the opponent and make it a bit hard for the opponent to actually play Magic at the same level as you. Mm. And so it levels the field when I'm playing small creatures. If I'm also stalling the opponents a little bit, it buys me time.
Yeah, Hate Bears is funny because it sort of stops the opponents from doing broken things, right? Like,
right.
It doesn't stop them from doing anything. They can still do stuff, but it's harder to do, you know, the chain of things all in the same turn that really have the huge impact.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's more like you're sticking a little wrench in the wheel of their value, and you try to run faster than them.
Right.
And I like that my Hate Bear deck is not a lock deck. It's not a complete stacks deck that makes it impossible for the opponents to play Magic. It's more just making it a little bit more difficult so I can gain a little bit of advantage.
Yeah, I want to address that really quick because anybody who is calling the Hate Bears deck a stacks deck in the comments, and there was a lot, you don't know what stacks is. The deck's not a stacks deck. It didn't have Stasis, Winter Orb, Static Orb, any of the really locked down. Stacks is trying to make it so that your opponents can't do anything.
Right.
The Hate Bear stuff is trying to slow down your opponents. But if you notice in that game on Extra Turns, I won't spoil it, but all players, including Jesper's opponents, are able to do plenty of stuff. The game still happens. Yeah. Everyone's doing things. In fact, it's a fairly close game. He's not trying to stop his opponents from playing Magic at all. He's just saying like, hey, if you're going to try and do like five things in a turn and storm off or whatever, that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
But if you want to cast like a spell or two on your turn, you're still going to be able to do that.
I like the fact that it's a soft lock. It's not a lock even, but it's very fair actually. And also because most of the Hate Bears is the stacksy part is tied to creatures.
Right.
So all of you should be able to deal with creatures. It's not that it's impossible to stop or do something against it. I think it's pretty fair, actually.
Well, in that case, let's actually talk about unfair things, which were what I'm calling sort of the common win cons of Magic, the things that decks like the Hate Bears decks and Stacks decks in general tend to put a, like, you know, put them through quicksand, or like you said, throw a wrench in their plans.
I mean, I think if we're going to talk about stopping the opponents from winning, then you have to know the common ways by which people win, right?
Right.
You have to be prepared for what's going to come at you. So, yeah, let's talk about the common win cons.
I think the biggest one for that I think most Magic casual players see are sort of the one big spell. So Expropriate is a card we talk about all the time. Insurrection, your Craterhoof Behemoth swinging for the win. If you're a Jesper art fan, Tooth and Nail as well to grab a combo piece out of your deck.
Two combo pieces,
yes. Right. Or even cards like Exsanguinate or Torment of Hailfire, which is how much mana can I sink into this at one point? If no one's going to stop me, then boom, it's going to almost guaranteed win the game on the spot, or at least close it out over a couple of turns. Now, obviously, these are a bit riskier because, as you know, the mana cost on them is so high. So another way that I think is very common for sort of people that are just getting into the game are infinite combos. So we've seen this a bunch. Kiki Jiki and Zealous Conscripts. You can make infinite copies and swing them for the win. The new Heliod and Walking Ballista. Jesper, you actually said you made a mono white deck. Is this combo in there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because both pieces, I mean, the artifact is super easy to tutor out. And that combo is just a very good combo.
Yeah, Heliod gives Walking Ballista lifelink and then gives counters to Walking Ballista so that you can ping people endlessly, infinitely. Yeah. I mean, you're in mono white, so I don't begrudge anybody figuring out any way you can win if you're in mono white.
Yeah, good luck in general.
Yeah, gloves off at that point when you're playing mono white. You're not playing fair.
I mean, you are playing. You're being held back enough by the way the game's designed, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Painter's Servant was recently unbanned, and it combos with stuff like Grindstone. There's Machias and Triskelion.
Right.
Mike and Trike, probably what you'd go get with Tooth and Nail if you wanted to go infinite combo. There's Jimmy's favorite, the Mindslaver loops.
Yeah, finding a way to take someone's turn over and over again until they can't play the game anymore. Also a way to, quote-unquote, go infinite in a way. I would say Josh's favorite is the next common win con, which is a drawn-out value engine. And this never wins the game on the spot, but just says, hey, I'm going to play the game and get so much more value over time that it's going to be impossible for you to catch up. So cards like the Great Henge or Yarok the Desecrated, as we saw, Amaz take to really like powerful effect. Panharmonicon, even just like multiple swings with the Annihilator effect is enough to take out a player. And that is what I would call a drawn out value engine, where you have the ability to say, hey, I've got so much value, you can't kill me right now. And every turn or every single moment you give me to keep playing is another moment where you're going to be unable to catch up.
Yeah. I think a lot of the ways that people chain cards together, if they assemble an engine where they have a comic guide and a sack outlet, and there's so many ways that you can add free cards together and get an infinite thing going, and usually it doesn't take much to stop that little engine.
Right. Just one piece of it being removed at the exact right time is often enough to set that player back a whole turn.
Yeah.
There's alternate win cons as well, and another shout out to you, Jesper, you seem to be on a lot of these. Thassa's Oracle is a new laboratory maniac that everyone that caused quite the big scene when it first got announced. Approach of the Second Sun as well, basically cards that say like you win the game on them are ways to win.
Yeah, I tried to convince my playgroup that it's okay that I do Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation because I painted Thassa's Oracle, but they're still a little bit hesitant about giving the green light to that kind of devious behavior.
I can understand why.
Yeah, I mean, if I ever get to design a card and it wins me the game on the spot, I'm certainly playing it. So, and then a new way of winning that has sort of been more popularized recently, I would say, Josh, you've actually had a fair hand in helping this out, which is just big damage, making the game go faster through cards like Torbran, Thane of Red Fell, which adds 2 damage to each every time you have a red source that deals damage. Fiery Emancipation does 3x damage. Josh built an Obosh the Prey Piercer deck, and then there's also Neheb the Eternal, which is a deck that I love running. And this is just about ending the game really quickly, but also being able to ramp out fast and get ahead of opponents and then say like, all right, can you deal with all this damage I'm putting out? And of course, the last final win con is commander damage, the common one, but probably more uncommon these days than anything else.
Wait, the common one?
Well, that's why it's at the end of the list.
When's the last time you died to commander damage? I think this is the theoretical one. Is
there you go.
It's theoretically possible, but it actually never happens.
Right.
Every once in a while, a player in a game gets knocked out by commander damage, but you almost never see commander damage be the like deciding factor in the victory.
Yeah, sometimes it puts just a little bit of pressure on them to be like, okay, I have to react to that, otherwise I will die to it. Like the Swiftfoot Boots moment in the Game Knights episode. Right. But in general, you're right. It's not terribly common, but it is still a win con.
Yeah.
All right. So how do we stop the opponent from winning with so many different ways that they could possibly try to win, right? That seems difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I know exactly what they're going to do and they can stop it. It's like they can do a million different things. So how do you get ready for that?
Well, the number one way that I wrote down, which I thought is a little cheeky, and I'm sorry, but it is to just win yourself. And I'm being absolutely serious here. A lot of times games do come down to this thing where it's like two players, maybe even three players are primed to win. And if you can win before they do, you have effectively stopped them from winning. It's a little reductive, but you know, a lot of times you're trying to gauge the odds when you're setting up for your win condition, right? If you set your board up to win and then pass the turn, that's often a really big mistake. And Jesper, this is something that you brought up as well, which is it healthy or wise to tap out, set up your win condition, and saying, if nothing happens in the next three turns, then I can win?
Yeah, but that was one of the reasons why I started discussing this with you guys, is that I had a lot of plays where one of my friends would set up an enormous board state. He would tap out for Syndicate's Resurgent, and with the board state he had, we all knew he was going to be able to win if it came around to his turn again. But it's also a very bold move, because there's three players that sees the danger and are able to respond to it. And usually it wouldn't be that bad, because on the rotation of three, we would have gotten rid of Syndicate's Resurgent. I noticed that if you had a Nature's Claim and you would just destroy it, then you have basically time walked that guy. He spent seven mana on nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of made me think about being a more reactive player rather than being a board state player, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And that's actually something I think a lot of people could take note of, which is be more reactive than a focus on what you have on your board. Because there's a lot more power, as we know, with the cards in your hand at instant speed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the reasons I love Vidal Canori so much, right?
Right.
Because it allows you to play everything reactionary, even Zendikar Resurgent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a lot of mana, though.
Yeah, but I mean, if you have Vidal Canori out, you're just holding all your mana up all the time. So if you ever see a window, you just stick Zendikar Resurgent and go, okay, well now I'm going
to
win.
Now I got the most powerful card in my deck.
But I think it comes down to change. For me, at least, it came down to changing my playstyle a little bit. It came down to me trying to not show how I was going to win by deploying all my weapons on the board, but instead keeping a little bit back and not deploying my threats until I was actually able to win. And that meant I had to change a lot of cards to be able to be a more instant and more reactive player. And I ended up really liking that kind of play style.
Yeah.
It's either going to be better for you to try and sprint and win or to try and trip everybody else.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you have to sort of determine that's what the gauging of the odds is. If we're sprinting to the finish line, am I going to win that race? And if I'm not, then I probably should be in the tripping mode.
Right, right. To stop them. Like, for instance, cards like Teferi's Protection or Heroic Intervention. Veil of Summer is this brand new card that is just...
Brand new, but...
Well, yeah, like a year old. But these are cards that basically are saying, hey, you know what? If I can't win, there's something I can do to disrupt their plan.
Right.
Like, if you know someone's going to go infinite with Kiki Jiki and Zealous Conscripts, then Teferi's Protection just gives you an entirely new turn to say, hey, you can't even swing out at me and that turn that you're trying to win. I'm going to come back and I'm going to do something about it. So there's a lot of power there as well.
Sure.
All right, let's move into the next category. And this is what you were speaking to, Jesper, I think, which is a good way to stop your opponent from winning is to play at instant speed.
Right.
Yes.
Because it's way harder to stop them when you're stuck at sorcery speed.
The card that made me change my style the most is the card Decimate. You can remove a creature, a land, an enchantment, and what else? Is that it?
Land, enchantment, creature, artifact.
Artifact, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems great, because it's sometimes, 4 mana, get rid of 4 things.
It seems super great, but it's first of all, it's sorcery speed.
Yep.
And second of all, sometimes it's a dead card because there's only 3 of the 4 targets.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes you, for to be able to play it, you have to target one of your own things, and that hurts. But I always loved that card, but I started taking it out and adding Nature's Claim instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about Nature's Claim, actually, because this is a card that I think we're going to mention another probably 20 times before this episode is out. So I'll read it. It's just green for an instant. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. Its controller gains 4 life. I know a lot of new players are going to see this and compare it to Decimate and go, all right, 1 mana for 1 thing or 4 mana for 4 things. I'm obviously going to take the 4 mana option. What has pivoted you towards Nature's Claim over and over again?
It's the versatility of it. The Nature's Claim is an instant removal that will stop an opponent from going off with a mana doppler or a crucial artifact for his free card combo. Whereas Decimate is just a dead card in an instant mode where you want to stop someone in not your turn, what is in his turn or her turn. And they just think the best thing about Nature's Claim is that you can still play a free cost card and keep 1 mana open. With Decimate, you're tapping out in turn 4, right?
Yeah, having Nature's Claim just be 1 mana, we often talk about how great Path to Exile is or Swords to Plowshares, just because, you, like you said, if you have 5 mana, you can play 4 mana worth of spells, hold open that 1 mana, and just have so many options when the table goes around to stop or disrupt something without sort of dampening your own plan because you weren't able to develop your board out as well.
I also think, like, what are the situations where Decimate's going to save you from dying, but Nature's right. Claim yeah. won't? Right? Like, how yeah. often is you're like, well, I'm dead to this enchantment, but I'm also dead to this artifact, and I'm also dead to this creature. Right? Usually any moment yeah. where you're going to be dead to something, it's going to be a singular thing.
Right.
And if you get rid of it, you will then live. And sure, I would like to get rid of that artifact or that creature too, but that's the gravy part. I really just don't want to die. Nature's Claim is really good at saving you from dying because it's easy to hold 1 mana open, and it's basically going to save you in the same situations as Decimate for 1 mana at instant speed, whereas Decimate won't save you at all if they go off on their turn, right? So
yeah,
I basically never play Decimate because 4 mana is just too much, even though, the value's a little bit higher. I'd rather just, it's just so hard to hold open 4 mana. And then, like you said, even if you could do that, sometimes it would still just not have targets.
Yep. It has to still be at sorcery speed for the most part. Yeah. So it definitely is just a bit of a damper.
We all played Decimate. We all
back in the day,
and say, wow, this is insane. But it's just not as good as Nature's Claim when it comes down to changing your play style this way that we are talking about.
Yeah, and I think a lot of a common mistake that newer players will make, and this is something that we all were victim to, which is you only start judging cards on their best case scenario as opposed to seeing it as a whole. Yeah. And understanding, know what, when this card doesn't work, it's actually, it would have been better just to even have a land in my hand at that point.
Usually when people, we talked about how people usually win by chaining cards together. Usually in a full game of Commander, there's one or two moments in a game where the game is decided, where an opponent will do some crazy shenanigans and pull cards together and everything seems like likely to explode. I only often find it to be one or two instance in a game of Commander.
Right.
So you only need to stop one thing, and you need to stop it fast, and you only need to stop it with a Nature's Claim usually. That's why I think that card is so fantastic. That one or Chain of Vapor or instant cards that will just stop one card this exact moment, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think players shy away from something like Chain of Vapor because they look at the downside, which is it bounces it, right? It doesn't get rid of it. But most of the time, like you said, if you're going to lose to the thing, the fact that it bounces back to their hand is immaterial to you. What's really important is that you stopped it. You're not dying. You get another untapped step.
Yeah.
You get another chance now to either win yourself or get really ready for the fact that you know absolutely they can win because you know that card that you just put back in their hand. But you didn't die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention, you may also have two other players at the table who all go, oh, we all need to prepare for this imminent doomsday and get rid of it.
Yeah.
Now, a couple other ways to play at instant speed. Cards like Rune of the Hidden Realm pair really well because it's an activated ability on a creature, and that is able to disrupt stuff in instant speed. I've seen that happen multiple times with Josh's deck where you're like, all right, I'm ready to go. Oh, shoot. he has three or four ways just on his board and untapped mana, I really can't jump into this and try and win the game just because there's a sort of a soft lock on just the potential that my opponent can do something to disrupt what I'm trying to do here. Cards like Kenrith as well, Zakama, Thrasios, like you said, and Golos are all ways, again, that have the ability to do something at instant speed, although Golos is obviously on the higher on the mana cost side. But again, just being able to hold that up as well as cards in your hand means that you now have multiple options and multiple ways that opponents need to be afraid of if they're going to try and win in front of you. Counterspells, go for it.
After I started thinking about this, I built a deck with Marath.
Will of the Wild, yeah.
And he or she, I don't know which one it is able to do multiple things. One of them is shooting damage. So having mana open with that commander always give me an ability to shoot down pingers. Mm. But I also did something like playing an Academy Rector, having mana open and passing the turn, and the moment before it's my turn, shooting my own Academy Rector, putting Syndicar Resurgent into play. And then we are good to go.
See, that card gets better if you play it at instant speed.
Exactly. But I like the versatility of a commander that has an activation cost that can be used in so many different ways.
Right.
It also just makes it scary for your opponent. They see the commander, they see the open mana, and they're like, okay, like let's say you have Golos. Do they even try to really go for it? Because they don't know. If you activate, even if they assume you don't have anything in your hand, still they have to deal with what's on top of your deck, and it could easily be something that thwarts whatever, you know, plan they have. So do I really want to tap 9 mana for an expropriate here?
Right.
Yeah, it's risky. It just makes things risky for them. So that can make people a little bit gun shy or wait for a better moment, which just might give you enough time to win yourself.
And sometimes it's just the threat of it is enough.
Yep.
You can sometimes just hint at stuff that you can do even though you're packing 5 lands in your hand.
Yeah, actually, you know, thinking about threatening, counterspells are so powerful because in one of the most recent Game Nights episodes where I played Kalia, I had to change my entire sequence of events just because Josh had 2 blue mana open. I was like, all right, well, I got to run out of Grand Abolisher first to protect my turn because this is the safest, cheapest play I can make. But that still cost me 2 mana and basically changed my entire game plan. So counterspelling, just having flash speed with a Vedalken Orrery or an Alchemist Refuge, cards like Elsha of the Infinite are all ways to just make sure that opponents are not going to be, you know, as certain or secure moving into their turn because you have those up. And then, like you said, better commanders, Marath, East, on Captain Sisse, these are all commanders that have the ability to work and move at instant speed, and thus immediately just on the board become a threat in and of themselves. Let's move on to one that I think is very much in your new play style here, which is just a lower mana curve. We've talked about Nature's Claim. Now Josh and I are two players that are probably not so hot on the card like Misdirection, but this seems like a card that is something that definitely is a little more interesting to you. So I'll read it for everyone. It's 3 blue-blue for an instant. It says, you may exile a blue card from your hand rather than pay this spell's mana cost. Change the target of a target spell with a single target. Now, we've talked about it a lot as to why we're not huge fans of this card, but Jesper, I think you actually have a differing opinion here.
Yeah, I like cards that can be played without any mana, even though the disadvantage is discarding a card. And the reason is that people usually don't think it's possible. If you already used your Force of Will, then people feel safe. So then they will try to do what their deck is supposed to do and how they will win. And then you have a wrench in their wheel, or you have ability to stop them. I had a friend who always loved to take a lot of turns and play a lot of extra turn spells. And in my Rashmi deck, I started packing Misdirection. I packed Misdirection because I wanted to be able to save Rashmi in case somebody wanted to cast Swords to Plowshare on it.
Right.
But in this instant, he was playing Time Warp in his Edric deck, trying to go off and take an extra turn with all his weenies, and he would definitely win. But I just changed that extra turn to me instead. I've never seen anyone's will to live drain away from his face like that. And it's the best feeling ever. And of course, having two turns, I won that game afterwards. And he was a broken man. Broken.
It's a little window into Jesper's Jesper's mind there.
And of course, there are new cards like the Force of Vigor and Deflecting Swat, the cards you can play for free if your commander's out. Those are, I think, just auto-includes in so many decks because of the utility, right? Yeah. If you can surprise someone out of nowhere with a card like that. And I don't know how many times where I'm like, I know Josh isn't playing Force of Will in this deck. All right, I'll play this out. But it's like, oh, but he does play Pact of Negation, or he does play Deflecting Swat. So you're just caught in this situation where you have to now account for a whole list of cards, even when they have no mana open, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Deflecting Swat a lot more than Misdirection. I find that little writer clause of, on Misdirection, it says, of a spell that has a single target.
Right.
To just too often make it hard to use, whereas Deflecting Swat, you can change all the targets on the spell. I used to play Misdirection quite a bit and just had too many times where it just didn't do what I wanted it to do. But I do agree, zero or really low cost stuff is, you know, extremely important. Like you said with Nature's Claim, the difference between holding open three mana and one mana is ginormous.
Yeah.
But I think, Josh, you just need to take away someone's will to live once. And you will.
I've stolen a time stretch before. Yeah, it does. It feels great. Don't get me wrong.
Feels great for you. Yeah. Feels awful for the other person. And then everyone at the table is like, "Yay! I think that's good." But now it's bad because you have all those turns.
Yeah, because now you just win.
Yeah, no one's really happy in that case.
Yeah. So speaking of Nature's Claim, there's a whole slew of cards that basically fit that same mold, which is they're cheap, maybe not free. Usually they're like one mana. And they seem to have like a major downside
or a limitation.
Yeah. So Nature's Claim, it's the life gain, which obviously we don't care about that much in Commander, because four life just usually doesn't matter towards like who's going to win the game in the end. One of our favorites on the show we've talked about for years is Swan Song, which is a counter spell. It's a little narrow in what it can counter, and it also gives that opponent a 2/2 flyer. But both of those things tend to be totally fine. Because most of the stuff you want to counter, it can, and also the 2/2 flyer just doesn't tend to matter that much.
Yeah, it's way more important to counter a Zendikar Resurgent for one mana and give him a 2/2 rather than just have that land on the board.
Right.
Defile is a newer card from Modern Horizons. It's -1/-1 to a target creature until end of turn for each swamp you control. So it's a little bit more limited in what you can do with it, but this card gets around Indestructible, it gets around so much, and just for one black mana in a mono black deck, or even a two color deck, can do a lot of damage. Pongify is the blue destroy creature, gives him an ape.
Yeah, I started including Echoing Truth in decks that have blue also. Echoing Truth just return a non-land permanent, but that's very versatile. So I started switching out Chaos Warp for Echoing Truth instead, because Echoing Truth can be devastating against someone with a token technique.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it returns
all with the same name.
And of course, Chain of Vapor, which you talked about earlier, which is a bounce spell for an on-land permanent, but it has the downside that that permanent's controller may sacrifice a land. If the player does, they may copy this spell and may choose a new target for that copy. So if they want to sack a land, they can bounce something of yours or somebody else's. Jesper, have you ever seen anybody sacrifice a land to Chain of Vapor?
Never. Actually, never. But I have used it on one of my own permanents, and then myself paid the disadvantage and bounced another thing.
Oh, nice. And
that's even versatile with that card, actually, that I like.
Yeah, it's also important to pay attention. A lot of cards these days will say bounce target non-land permanent that an opponent controls, and Chain of Vapor does not say that. So it is interesting, right? If you want to rebuy a card. And then a great way to lower the mana curve, one that we saw to great effect again with Josh's Scarab God deck, which is Training Grounds or cards like Biomancer's Familiar. Josh, how much mana...
So these are cost reducers?
Yeah, cost reducers. Yeah, Training Grounds, by the way, it's blue for an enchantment. Activate abilities of creatures you control cost up 2 less to activate. This effect can't reduce the mana that costs to less than 1 mana. Josh, you activate your Scarab God. I don't even know how many times.
Yeah, I think it was 7 to 8 times, so I saved about 16 mana from the Training Grounds.
16 mana from one card that costs a blue mana. That is a rate that will 100% give you that value engine that is going to be just better than your opponents and just override them with what you're able to generate off of it. So definitely never count those cards out. They are so good in the right instances and with the right commanders. All right, we are going to move on and talk about more ways to stop your opponents from winning, including ways to up your card draw in a very, very fun way. But before that, we're going to hear a message from our mid-roll sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, we're back. We have special guest MTG artist Jesper Eising talking with us about stopping your opponent from winning. The next category is one that's near and dear to my heart.
All of our hearts, I guess.
It's highly efficient card draw.
Right.
Yes.
This is definitely a Jesper favorite as well.
Yeah, I like the point that you made to us here, Jesper, about if you have a lower mana curve, then you're likely to empty your hand faster. So what does that mean?
Yeah, I noticed that it's a good example is I started switching out Cultivate and Kodama's Reach for Rampant Growth and Far Seek, for example. Mm-hmm. So lowering my curve from 3 to 2, all of that just meant that I would have emptied most of my hand around turn 3 or 4. So I needed to rebuild up to 7 very quickly. And cards that I like to do that is, of course, Wheel of Fortune, mm-hmm. or all the other wheel effects, like Windfall.
Yep.
Time Twister, if you have that.
Not many people do.
Yeah, I personally don't. I mean, Wheel of Fortune is so good. I think people don't correctly evaluate it as a card draw card. I don't have unlimited Wheel of Fortunes, but if I did, I would put it in every deck that has red, regardless of what other colors were there. Because of the fact that you discard your hand, but then you draw back up to 7 cards.
Yep.
And I think people always want to wait till they have no cards in hand, but the correct way to play that card is often, oh, I have 3 cards left, cast Wheel of Fortune, because that's 3 mana, draw 3 cards. It's totally fine. Or sorry, draw 4 cards.
Yeah, 4
cards. It's totally fine. And then, yeah, of course, if in some instances you draw more than that, but you don't have to get 7 cards out of it for it to be good. Even if you get 3, it actually can be good.
Yeah.
So, So I think, Wheel of Fortune, if maybe you don't think it's that great, maybe you're not playing it right. Maybe you're only trying to play it when you're going to get 6 or 7 cards. 3 or 4 cards can be fine.
Yeah, and in general, right, like the best rate you can ask for in card draw and Magic, I usually try to say if you can reduce your rate of card draw so that's 1 mana is equal to 1 card, then you're getting one of the best rates in the game. So a card like Painful Truths will draw you 3 cards for 3 mana. Wheel of Fortune oftentimes gets way better than this. If you have 2 cards in hand and Wheel of Fortune's one of them, you're actually drawing 6 cards for 3 mana. So you're getting, for 1 mana, you're getting 2 cards. And so that's like absolutely some of the best rates you can ever get in the game. That's why cards like Rhystic Study or Guardian Project are so good over the long term. Because I've had games where Rhystic Study has drawn me, 8, 9 cards? And that means for 1 mana, I'm drawing 3 cards off a rate of that card. Now, it's obviously not all in one turn, but that still is better than any blue card draw spell out there, with the exception of, 1 mana draw 3.
Yeah. Ancestral Recall.
Which is obviously not legal. Yeah. So again, if that's the absolute best rate and it's been banned, Wheel of Fortune, if you're casting it with 3, even 2 cards in hand, you're going to be getting a rate that's similar to that. So that's, I think, how people should be evaluating that card. Not to mention, you can disrupt your opponents.
Exactly. And you can fill your graveyard with the stuff that you have in your hand.
Yep.
One of my favorite part is if you can drop a 1 mana artifact in turn 1 or a mana dork in turn 1, you can add a another kind of ramp in turn two, and then you immediately Wheel of Fortune in turn three.
Mm-hmm.
You're disrupting the opponent enormously, and it doesn't matter that you're losing a couple of cards. You're gaining seven and destroying the hand of the opponent. I think that's a good, fair trade, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, like, definitely don't discount the fact that, you know, I've had so many games where I'm looking, all right, turn four and five, I'm really going to be able to get going with my hand. A Wheel of Fortune, any time before that, completely disrupts my plans. It changes the way I sequence my cards, and oftentimes would just put me so far behind that I don't have a realistic chance of getting back in the game unless I really top deck into something nice.
A funny thing you can also do is if you can pull off a turn two Wheel of Fortune, like you play turn one Birds of Paradise or something.
Oh, yeah.
You can mana screw your opponents because it's like a forced mulligan that they can't mulligan out of.
Yeah.
Wow. So like you can definitely like just like they played their one land, you went first or before them, and then you mull them into a hand that maybe has no lands or only has one land. And
or has all lands, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So,
there's a lot of ways you can mess with your opponents.
That's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think to get back to it, I mean, if you're lowering the curve, you need more than Windfall and Wheel of Fortune. You also need Rhystic Study and other ways that will net you cards. Runic Amasawa is a fantastic card I found recently that will just slowly fill your hand. But also, I try to think of my commander if that could be a card advantage card too.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite deck is Omnat of the Royal, and he has a built-in card draw engine that starts rolling when he's over 8 mana. So I think also thinking about what your commander can do to refill your hand is very important.
Right. And in talking about all of this, Jesper, you mentioned that thinking about cards differently like this, thinking about lowering your mana curve and in general has created a change in your overall playstyle. Can you tell the viewers what your playstyle was before you sort of had these Melissa de Toro revelations and into what your playstyle has evolved to as a result?
Yeah, I mean, before that, I was into big board states, a lot of token strategies, and a lot of big plays. And it was fun when it happened. But most of the time, I found that I had a winning hand in my hand, and I was able to do it if it came around to my turn, and then somebody else would win, and I would kind of feel bad. That's why I started lowering the curve to, like, really lowering it, so that the main part of my deck now is around cost 2 or 3.
Wow.
I look at cards now and think I will not include anything that costs over 5 mana unless it have a major impact on the game the moment it hits. And that's usually a Sun Titan that I will include because that has a very good impact on a game.
Yeah.
It does something when it comes down. It's a really, really good card. If it lives, it's even better. But after that, I don't see many cards that has a potential in my deck, because they will be too dangerous to spend 7 or 8 mana to cast and then get countered. So I would rather be... I look at a card now and I think, does this have an impact the moment it comes into play? Or is it good on its own? Or is it good together with other cards? If it's not a good card on its own in any circumstance, I'll try not to include it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Well, speaking of the mana difference, if you're saying you're not going above 3, I wanted to ask a couple of questions to the quorum here. If you had to choose between Path to Exile, which only gets rid of a creature, versus a card like Anguished Unmaking, and the assumption is that you're able to play both these cards in your deck, which would you choose? Yeah, you're an Orzhov or more. Which of those two would you choose if you could only have one? So Anguished Unmaking exiles a target non-land permanent, and you lose 3 life. Path to Exile exiles a creature, and the opponent can put a basic land into play tapped.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. I would like to have both, but you say I can only pick one? I like the versatility of the dual color card, but I still would rather go with the one cost, because the scenario where somebody is trying to win and kill me with a Berserk Dragon and I have one white mana open, that's a perfect blowout.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is want to kill me and I have one mana open, I can stop it. If I need to keep 3 mana open to be able to stop it, then I'm hindered too much in my board state and gameplay and whatever I want to do in the game. And I think that's the most important thing, is that I don't want to be stopped in what I'm doing to try to win. I will usually just have 1 or 2 mana open so I can stop anyone if they're trying to win before me. and Vindicate, or what did you say the other one
Anguish
was?
Anguish in the Making, but Vindicate's similar as well. Anguish,
yeah. I think they're a little bit too expensive, casting cost-wise, for what they're doing, because what I want to do is just stop one thing quickly.
Right. You'd rather have a Nature's Claim that's a artifact or enchantment rather than something that's target non-land permanent.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about a card like Oblivion Stone? This is a 3-mana artifact that you can pay for to tap it to put a fate counter on target permanent, but more importantly, you can pay 5 and tap it to sack it and destroy each non-land permanent without a fate counter on it, and then you remove all the fate counters from all permanents. So it's a cheaper artifact. It's 3-mana. However, it's a board wipe effect that costs 5 to do afterwards. Do you typically find that having this sort of effect on your board, Jesper, is something that you'd like to do with this new playstyle of yours?
I never played that card, actually. I never played it because I think usually I don't want to destroy everything because I will have artifacts that I rely on, or I will have an enchantment like Rhystic Study, and I don't want to mess with that. I would rather have a pinpoint card that can stop things than having a wide board clear.
I mean, it's great because we love the differing opinions. We're usually the advocates of, you know, 5 single target removal, 5 board wipes.
But yeah, do you not play Wraths at all?
Yeah, but I play the red one, the one that gives 13 damage, and you can usually pay for 1 red mana. Yeah, I play Blasphemous Act, and I play Toxic Deluge.
Because they're cheap.
And I play Cyclonic Rift.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, O-Stone is expensive, right? If you wanted to play it and activate it on the same turn, that's 8 mana.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're playing it and then hoping that it's still around by the time it gets back to your turn. And usually that either doesn't happen or everyone says, well, I'm going to just attack you until you light that thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't play O-Stone much anymore. Do you?
No, I rarely do. And like Jesper said, oftentimes you have so much stuff on your own side of the board and the magic Christmas land scenario that you're going to somehow put fate counters on your stuff before someone gets rid of your O-Stone. Mm. It's just not going to happen. And you're just going to waste a ton of mana.
Yeah, I usually have it in my Tim deck because it can untap things. And even there, I found like it was very unlikely I was going to be able to protect enough stuff to make it worth it. And I just took it out.
Just tons of mana they sink into it. Yeah. Now, obviously, we've been talking about all these low CMC spells, but I think a lot of players are still very much entranced by what I would call the massive swing board wipes, which is another way to stop your opponents from winning. So cards like Austere Command, Bane of Progress, or Dismantling Wave are cards that are saying, get rid of everything of this one type. So in a way, it's a bit more pinpoint. But yes, but these cards cost 6 mana and up. How do you feel about them? I think we know the answer, but I still want to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I like Austere Command because you can choose what's best for you. You can choose the option. And usually you can pack that in a deck like my Hate Bear deck. And I can kill all the high power creature and my bears will survive. I like the versatility of that. But usually I don't want to wipe boards. I want to keep the stuff I played and I want to make it difficult for other people to get access to their card, in a Hate Bear deck at least. But I think six mana, if you compare Austere Command with Toxic Deluge.
Right.
Right.
Toxic Deluge is just so much better and it will take care of all the creatures. Usually Austere Command, like we talked about with Decimate, it takes care of a lot of things. And in a dream scenario, you will wipe the board from everything troublesome. But usually you're just looking at, okay, you're losing a little bit yourself too. And yeah, I don't like that.
It's just not worth it, right?
I would rather play Wrath of God or card that are cheaper in the mana cost and does one thing.
Right. Vandal Blast, I think, is one card that is one that fits very squarely, right? You like Cyclonic Rift for the same reason, just because it's a card that, one, blows up things that you don't control, and you have the versatility of option of either paying 1 red for it or 4 and a red to overload it. Personally, this is probably one of my favorite cards in Magic now that I think about it, just because it has the ability to really disrupt your opponents and slow them down in a way that I think Jesper, you would approve of, which is stopping the ramp or whatever it is.
I like that card too, but I recently started switching it out for a Braid.
Oh, a Braid.
Because the one you're talking about is a sorcery. And a Braid is an instant.
Right.
A Braid will deal 3 damage to target creature, which is often very, very important. Or it can destroy an artifact. So I know it's way worse than... What's your card again?
Vandal Blast. Yeah, the full effect of Vandal Blast. Right.
Sorry. But I just think a Braid, for me, it's more versatile in what I want to do.
Yeah, that seems nuts to me. Vandal Blast, I think, is just so good. I put it in every deck with red in it. Because the option of 1 red mana to destroy an artifact... There's almost never a game where you're not fine doing that. And because it's so cheap at sorcery speed, I'm fine with it. And then often you can just totally win a game off the back of the overload.
Right.
Because all the decks that don't have green in them are relying on their artifacts for like half their mana. So if you stick the overload end, a lot of times you win.
Yeah. And we saw that in the match we played on extra turn, that Jimmy, you just basically halved my mana producing board with a, with a Vandal Blast, and I was sure I was going to die after that.
Turns out it didn't actually matter, though.
I mean, it mattered.
That's not as much as
it mattered a lot.
Not game ending mattering.
Yeah.
But I started just changing it for a braid or for the card Wear and Tear. Those are cheap and they're instants, and I like that a little bit better. Or maybe it's something I need to test and come back to and see if it works.
Yeah, we'd love to know your thoughts. And I think this is something for the audience as well to think about, right? Would you rather run cards like Wear and Tear and Abrade over a card like Vandal Blast? In this case, it seems like the instant speed versus sorcery is really the big differentiator here.
Maybe because I play Vidalcan Ori in all my decks, that Vandal Blast is sometimes an instant for me.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
All right, let's move on to the next category, and this is obviously the more controversial one, but we'll call it stacks as an or hate bear stack / anti-strategy or slowing your opponents down. This is the one that we saw most in play again in extra turns with your new deck. The anti-strategy category has cards like Torpor Orb, which says creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. Pithing Needle, which specifically affects one thing. Lidvala, Keeper of Silence, which stops activate abilities of your creatures your opponents control. And of course, the Stony Silence and the Grafdigger's Cages type cards. Are you a big fan of Torpor Orb and these sorts of cards, Jesper? Or do you find that because they also affect you, you'd rather not play them?
Yeah, I look at them. I constantly want to try to put them in decks. And I look at them and evaluate if it's going to hurt me too much. And usually it will hurt me too much. But Lidvala, Keeper of Silence, never hurts you. It's just a one-sided disruptor for the opponents.
Right.
So I'm like, in Lidvala is the perfect card. But I think cards like we talked about, Rest in Peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the cards that I have my decks completely destroyed if an opponent played that card. And I started thinking, I'm going to play that card too, because it's amazing what it can do.
Yeah, if you can't beat them, join them, right?
But I think it's constantly an evaluation between, is this hurting me a lot or can I play around it? And if you can play around it and hurt your opponents really bad, then it might be worth the inclusion, I think.
Yeah, one I like quite a bit is Grafdigger's Cage. It's one mana. That's one of the reasons I like it. For an artifact, it says creature cards in graveyards and libraries can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards or libraries. Because I'm not a big graveyard player myself, generally.
Right.
And so most of my decks are just like, yeah, it might be mildly inconvenient for me. Every once in a while, I might have a Snapcaster Mage or something. But in general, it's going to hurt other players a lot, because there's almost always one dedicated graveyard deck at the table. And then everybody else is likely to have certain graveyard interacting cards or flashback cards or whatnot.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can just be a silver bullet that only injures you a little bit.
Yeah, but totally decimates a deck.
Or if you're playing Boros, it might not hurt you at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
It's just a card you put in and you don't play it if it doesn't matter. But when it matters big time.
Right.
Right. I think a lot of times players think that, oh, because I'm Boros, I need to make sure that I'm making up for the deficits. But they don't think about cards like Grafdigger's Cage, which is just like, actually, maybe a big way that you fight back is by stopping other players and pulling them down to your sort of playing field, which is sort of what you're describing with your Hate Bears deck as well.
You know, it's sort of saying like, what can't my colors do? They literally can't do this thing. So can I just turn that off for everybody then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a card slot, but it sometimes, again, will completely hose another deck. And one card doing that much damage, let's say it's one card that affects 30 cards in an opponent's deck, that's better than any card in the history of Magic the Gathering. That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also some Planeswalkers, everyone's least favorite Teferi, T3 Fairy, can, you know, say each opponent can cast spells only anytime they could cast a sorcery.
Definitely
rough for Josh.
Don't like it.
Same with cards like Karn the Great Creator, stops activate abilities of artifacts. Ashiok Dream Render. Ugh, rough.
I like Ashiok a lot.
Yeah. This says spells and abilities your opponents control can't cause their controller to search their library.
More tutoring. No more fetching.
Yeah. Fetching. That's insane to me. That, you know, you could turn off 5-6 lands in someone's deck, but with just one Planeswalker.
No more Rampant Growth. Yeah. It cultivates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no more fun times for me. There's also, of course, mana stacks, and we saw this to great effect in Extra Turns. No spoilers, but Thorn of Amethyst was played, and you could watch this card almost create like a tidal wave of just like, we all have to now swim through this, or we have to wade through this quicksand to get to where we want to go. And I thought it was extremely effective. And again, just for two mana, saying non-creature spells cost one more to cast. If you're a creature-based deck, this is incredible in your deck.
Yeah, because that was one of the things I was looking at when I created the deck. I have about 40 creatures in that deck. Almost every effect, even counter spells and artifact destruction card, is put onto a creature.
Mm-hmm.
So I have so many creatures, and I'm not hindered by that almost at all. So for me, that was an auto-include.
There's probably a lot of people out there that have a deck that has 35 plus creatures. Thorn of Amethyst will be really good in that deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And you'll be surprised. Again, similar to like, you know, having a Training Grounds out, count how much extra mana your opponents have to pay if you do play a card like Thorn of Amethyst. And I think you will be surprised every single time. That it could get into the 10s, 20s, even 30s sometimes if the game goes on long enough. And that's a huge, huge amount of mana advantage you can get over them.
I also like something like Thorn of Amethyst because we hear from a lot of people who, like, maybe they have other people in their play group that play expensive cards and they feel like it's very difficult for me to beat this other player because they just are willing or have the ability to spend more money on magic than I do.
Yeah.
But cards like Thorn of Amethyst, Stony Silence, Rest in Peace, not expensive cards, totally hose certain decks. And a lot of the types of players that are playing with expensive cards are going to play some kind of combo or something that's very effective, but they need to play two things in a row. Thorn of Amethyst often just makes it so that's very difficult to do. They can't play the three cards in the same turn.
Yeah.
And so you can defeat those players with cards that are a lot cheaper than what they're doing by thinking of it in terms of like, hey, rather than try to beat them at their game, which is like play these really, you know,
high powered expensive cards,
I can try and stop those cards from being effective for them, which is usually cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot, actually.
And Josh, that was a discussion we had recently in my playgroup, is that some people have a lot of very old and expensive cards, and some of the other players feel maybe a little bit left behind. I took that to heart and built a mono white, extremely cheap deck. And that deck kind of, at some point, it completely rules the game just by playing Rule of Law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because Rule of Law is an insanely cheap card that will just, it will take everyone down to White's level.
Right, players can't cast more than one spell a turn.
You only get to play one spell.
You can't cast more than one spell per turn. It doesn't matter how much you've drawn with Rhystic Study. I have this
story I like to tell, and I will do a brief aside here, which is I used to play basketball a lot.
Mm.
And we used to play like a few times a week. We played at USC at the gym there when I was much younger. And there was this guy, and his name was Henry, and he was really good. Like, he was like 2 inches shorter than me, could just throw down windmill dunk, like super athletic, faster than me, stronger than me, shot better than me, dribbled better than me. Everything about Henry was better at basketball than me, but we would have to play this guy all the time, and I'm not trying to figure out a way to beat him. What I discovered was that I could be in better shape than Henry, so that's about all I could beat him at. So I just worked really hard to get in good shape, and then whenever we played against Henry, I would just doggedly stick on him and make him work really hard. And by about the middle of the game, every time we played, he'd be tired.
Ah.
Like, I wasn't going to beat Henry by trying to jump higher than him. I wasn't going to beat him by becoming a better shooter than him or whatever. Like, that was the way that I found. So don't try and beat the player who's playing the expensive cards at their game. Don't try and play more expensive cards than them.
Right.
Figure out a different angle of attack. And this can be that,
exactly.
Right? Don't try and beat Henry by being better at basketball than him. Be like, okay, well,
there's no way I can ever do that.
Yeah, but so I can just be in better shape than him, and that will be effective enough. And then, the funny thing was, after a while, like, Henry just hated playing against me. He would see me come on the court, and he would just deflate. And then I didn't even have to work that hard after a while because he just wouldn't try that hard in those games.
He's just passing more and getting it up.
Yeah, he just wouldn't be as assertive, and and we would just had like an 80% win rate after a while against teams where Henry was playing because he's usually awesome, but again, he would just be like, it's just too much work. I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
And nice guy, like, we were friends and everything, but it wasn't like that. But like, I think that's a really good lesson in life in general and gaming specifically, which is like, figure out an angle that's going to be in your favor. And it's not usually beating the person at the thing they're already awesome at.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You took stacks to basketball.
Yeah, Josh created his own anime storyline there.
That's amazing.
That's like the mid-season breaking point when it's like the mind, like, oh my gosh, this is what I can do. Yeah, I mean, in that case, like talking about cards that are, I like to call them annoying but effective, like Blind Obedience,
yeah.
Artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. That is sometimes just enough to completely stop someone in their tracks because they're the type of player that needs to have haste on their turn. They're coming in, they're using all their activated abilities out of nowhere, but now you've literally time walked them with a Blind Obedience or forced them to change their entire playstyle to try and get around a cheaper card that anyone has access to. Same with a card like Authority of the Consoles, yeah.
Blind Obedience really good against Mana Rocks too because you can't tap them the turn they come into play.
Yeah. Really slows people down.
Yep.
Yeah, and then of course... Oh yeah, go for it, Jesper.
I like all the Eidolons, the creatures, the Eidolons that one of them is the same as Rule of Law and the other one is you can't draw more than one card per turn.
Yeah. Spirit of the Labyrinth.
Yeah, I like them because it's creatures, so they're very easy to tutor up and play and get into play. But they're also very devastating for combo players.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That's why I don't feel so bad about playing stacksy cards. Because what they essentially do is they make it so that the combo player can't win and cheat.
Makes everybody play fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a difference between those type of cards and the stasis and the winter orbs and the static orbs of the world, which are like, okay, this game's just going to take forever now. I'm not saying, I have a stacks deck. I'd barely ever play it. I'm not saying those strategies are invalid or there's not places for them, but I understand why that frustrates people. But Thorn of Amethyst shouldn't frustrate people very much, right?
Yeah, like, almost every color can get rid of artifacts, right? So that's not even a big deal there.
Not just that. Like, you still get to play. It's just saying, like, you got to pay one more mana for stuff. So instead of like, playing your two-card combo on the same turn, maybe you can't do that. That seems like a totally fine strategy that nobody should be mad about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with cards like Ghostly Prison and Propaganda that just tax the opponent just a little bit, the tax part of stacks, without completely shutting them down. And like you said earlier about the creatures too, like the fact that you can tutor out creature hate bearers and get them onto the battlefield a lot easier and more quickly makes it great because your opponents can still remove them, but they'll have to use a removal spell. And using it on like a 2-mana 2/2 often feels so bad compared to the big combo piece or whatever it is. They're a very scary commander that's going to help them win the game. But they're going to have to do it because your one card is sort of slowing down their strategy. That makes them completely ineffective.
Also, when we talked about the way that people win, usually by chaining cards together, and usually that happens around turn 6 or 8. So if you can play a card like, let's say, Ethersworn Canonist, that only you can only cast one more if it's not an artifact you can't cast more than one spell per turn.
Right.
That will usually stop a combo player or it will make the person who's about to win have to get rid of this card before they can win. And usually that little obstacle is enough so that you get a whole turn and you get the ability to be able to win. So this is effectively a card that costs 2 mana that destroys a whole turn for the opponent. And it's a creature. It's easy to tutor up and find and play and still keep mana open so you can win in your turn.
Yeah, it's tripping them on the way to the finish line rather than trying to run faster than them.
Yeah, we'll do another sports comparison here. If you guys watch the 100-meter dash, you'll notice that there's a scientific process to it. How they come off the starting block, when they have their acceleration, when they hit their max speed, and all of that is very carefully planned out. And if you, at any moment, even if it was Usain Bolt, just pushed him a little bit to the left and stopped him from getting in his full stride, you're going to completely wreck their ability to win the game because they're planning on having an uninterrupted sequence of events to be able to do something at their maximum potential. So just that small little trip, don't ever trip a runner, by the way, but just that small obstacle in the way of a player that is kind of like that runner trying to get to the 100-meter dash line can just, again, completely slow them down and make them restart, right? If Usain Bolt, in the middle of his race, had to stop and restart from scratch, there's no way he's ever winning a race. Actually, he might
That's
still.
A good
he's
analogy.
Usain Bolt.
Yeah, he's pretty fast.
He's pretty fast.
Like, if it's against me, then yes, he wins.
Oh, okay. What about Henry?
I don't know. Henry then or Henry now? Oh, Henry's probably like 40 now.
Okay.
Henry probably could still dunk.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane if he's shorter than you.
He's 5'7".
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Henry was good. Henry probably listens to the show. Henry, sorry about all that.
He's just like, ah. The last stack strategy I want to talk about, the one that probably angers Josh the most, would just be mass land destruction, but not just land destruction, but sometimes cards like Blood Moon.
Maybe land denial.
Land denial, right? Like, because MLD is in general frowned upon. Do you ever play Blood Moon, Jesper? Is this something that you found effective, especially against players with like really expensive and really extra non-basic mana bases?
I play Blood Moon in every deck that has red. It's... Why
did I know that was going to be the answer?
that card is the same as Rule of Law.
It is not the same as Rule of Law, because there's a certain percentage of decks where it says you're not casting any spells now.
Yeah, you're just
Rule of Law says you're going to only do one thing, but you're going to still do the same amount of stuff as everybody else.
What I love about Blood Moon is that it usually makes it difficult for people who play a lot of expensive non-basic lands.
Right.
So what you should do is just play more basic lands and you're good to go. There's no problem.
The problem is it's impossible to make that adjustment during that game.
That's such a good point.
That's the problem with Blood Moon. Like, I don't mind Armageddon as much because I can play lands.
Right, and restart.
After it happens. Yeah. I mean, usually people play it and then win, which is also fine with Blood Moon, but Blood Moon, they don't. Nobody says, I play Blood Moon, and then I'm going to win the game.
Right.
That's how Armageddon is played. Blood Moon is usually played, and then you got to sit there, and it doesn't matter what lands I draw now, because they're going to come to play as mountains. And also, by the way, red can't remove enchantments, so I just can never get out of this. Yeah. That's why I hate Blood Moon. Armageddon's totally fine.
But what I love is that the greedy players are the one that are most annoyed by it. It's the one with all the expensive cards.
It doesn't have to be expensive lands. I got lands with guild gates in them.
Yeah, it's true. You're shutting down the guild.
It's just people who like to play a lot of colors.
Yeah, there you go. Oftentimes gets in the way of them. That's hilarious.
I've had a lot of my...
You're a bad person. Yeah. You're not going to talk me out of it. I wasn't mad about the hate bears, but Blood Moon?
Blood Moon, yeah. That gets his blood boiling.
But it's also because I had a Blood Moon played against my five-color decks that I know how devastating it is, and that's why I include it in my decks, because I felt it on my own body.
It's another reason why Nature's Claim is so good.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Because at least you can add the green.
Before the Blood Moon takes effect.
And then let it resolve and then get rid of it. Where you're way more likely to have that green available to you than you would if you had Decimate or something, which it's too late now for Decimate, because by the time it's your turn, they're all mountains.
Yeah. But you like to watch people's souls leave their body, Jesper, so it makes sense.
But do you guys play cards like Cataclysm?
Rarely. Only if I have a way to guaranteed win pretty much immediately after resolving it. Because it just feels too bad.
Okay. Again, I don't think those cards are similar to Blood Moon.
No.
Blood Moon is totally different in its own class. Maybe Back to Basics is the closest you're going to get.
Right.
In that it's not played as a game-winning play. And so it takes a player or two, maybe, and says, you got to sit there, and it doesn't matter what you draw.
Right.
Whereas at least Cataclysm, Armageddon, the rest, I can draw lands, or if I have lands in my hands, I can play them and I can start to recover. Ruination is also totally fine for the same reason. But Blood Moon is in a different space, because it's a persistent effect that sits there.
And if you can't get rid of it, you're done for.
I just think it's bad game design as in general, because the type of play, it's either an on switch or an off switch. So it either just doesn't do anything, or it just totally like, hey, this one card, guess what? If you weren't ready for it at that exact moment, you just can't beat it.
GG. Yeah.
Guess
you always have to be ready for it then, Josh.
Whatever. If somebody beats me with Blood Moon, most of the time, at least you can be like, all right, I concede.
Yeah.
Everybody have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, that player that played Blood Moon on me, I'm taking out my meanest deck and I'm pointing at you for the rest of the night. So that's what you get.
But you just need a chain of vapor and you're good to go. That's the whole point about where we're going, is that Blood Moon is bad. You can destroy it with a Nature's Claim or a chain of vapor or Echoing Truth. There's a lot to be done with it. So I don't feel it as devastating. I feel what the problem is, cards like that feel mostly annoying when you don't have an answer for them.
Mm.
So maybe I think the reason is to build your deck with cheaper answers.
I mean, I play more answers than probably anybody you know. So I think the problem is you have to have the answer now.
Yeah, unless, you know, exactly. Especially if you get a Blood Moon out turn two, then that's, you know.
Exactly, you're not going to have Chain of Vapor, held open on turn two or three most of the time.
Maybe now you have to.
Okay, I'll take it out. I'll take them out of the deck.
Ah, got him. All right, moving on to our last sort of area of ways to stop the opponents. And this is one that we talk about all the time on the show, which is just politics. There are obviously ways to get around opponents winning, or at least pointing their win condition at you, even if it is for one turn, learning how to point enemies at each other and not to becoming the active target, how to really learn how to threat assess correctly and drive other players to action. These are often ways that you can generate infinite value and never have to spend a single mana or card to do so. So when cards can't solve your in-game problems, Josh, maybe someone else can get rid of that Blood Moon for you.
I mean, that's what you usually resort to, right? Is asking somebody else, begging somebody else, offering them stuff. You know, going back to earlier when you said catch-all removal, it was like Path to Exile versus Anguish I'm Making. What would you have if you could only have one? Jesper, you said Path to Exile. I agree. I think another upside of Nature's Claim, Path to Exile, even Chain of Vapor, maybe to a lesser extent, is that don't forget you have the ability to barter with the abilities and effects and cards that you have. So right. Often you can be like, hey, I can get rid of a creature for you. Can you get rid of that thing for me? We can trade. And that turns your Path to Exile into an enchantment removal spell sometimes.
Right.
Not all the time, because your opponents don't always have what you need or care that you can just exile a creature. But some percentage of games, somebody's going to be open to that, which is like, you don't like that creature, right? I'll get rid of that. Can you get rid of this thing for me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you
that's
actually drew a card with your Path to Exile in the way.
Yeah. So that's another way that makes Nature's Claim and Path to Exile and those type of effects a little bit better, maybe.
Oh,
whereas
I
Anguish
see.
I'm Making, you don't need to make that deal. You just cast it on the thing you want to kill. So it doesn't get any better because of politics. I mean, it does in that you can also use it as like, hey, don't attack me. I'll kill that thing.
Right.
But you can do that with Path too.
Right, right. Interesting.
Yeah. I really like that. I mean, that's one of the things that you guys taught me to be a better political player, and not stopping at what I have in my hand, but trying to come up with the friends within the game that can work for me. I really like that aspect of Commander a lot.
Yeah. It's the Henry thing too, right? It's like, okay, well, what do I got in my hands? What's on the board? All right, well, given that that doesn't solve it, what else do I have access to? Oh, maybe talking to someone.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, if you want to learn how to talk to someone, you should also listen to our Sun Tzu episodes on the Art of War, Machiavelli, The Prince, World War One, and as well as our Taoism episodes. Those are all just sort of, you know, people love them just because they approach the game from a different angle and give players a lot more choices in how to play the game.
It's been a while since we did a politics episode. We might have to do one of those again,
renew
too.
It. Yeah. How to defeat Blood Moon 101.
Talk Jesper out of having it in his deck.
And finally, we have some honorable mentions for cards that can stop your opponents from winning. And these are cards that just basically say, you can't lose the game. So Glacial Chasm is a cumulative upkeep land that basically lets you, creatures you control can't attack, but you prevent all damage that will be dealt to you. A great way to sort of set yourself up before you get rid of it yourself. Platinum Angel, a classic card that says you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game. And then cards like Platinum Imperium, where it says your life total can't change. So, you know, these are, again, just sort of other ways to be like, hey, you know what? I have a silver bullet in my deck that is a creature or isn't necessarily an enchantment or an artifact, but this is a way that I can stop my opponent from winning. Usually you want to build your deck to take advantage of these cards. You don't want Glacial Chasm out there without a way to get rid of it at instant speed, for instance. you want to be able to get rid of that when you need it to.
I love to be able to play Crop Rotation on a card and then fetch Chasm on instant speed. Save yourself. Usually that's enough to completely wreck the plan of an opponent, and then you can win in your turn.
Right.
And that's just, again, it's just one green mana that will allow you to do that.
Yep.
Angel's Grace is a card that you see quite a bit.
Oh, right.
For this,
oh,
I'd say this is similar to your Crop Rotation thing. I'd say this is my preferred way to do it, just because if you have Platinum Empyrean on board, then they know, right? They're not going to step into it. But Angel's Grace is a one white mana for a split second instant card that says you can't lose the game this turn and your opponents can't win the game this turn. Until end of turn, damage that would reduce your life total to less than one reduces it to one instead. And this is, I think, a good version of this, whereas they don't know that's in your hand and it can kind of work, like you said, like that crop rotation thing. Yeah.
And it's split second.
Yeah.
It's very good. All right. To the listeners, how do you ensure victory in your friend groups? Are there ways that you do it that are more political than card-based, or are you more of a card-based player that uses that then to sort of move your politics along? And I guess for those of you that have watched the game, the Extra Turns episode, and now understand that that wasn't a Stacks deck, but it was a Hate Bear deck, what are your thoughts on Hate Bears in general, or Stacks-like effects if it's not the full-on lockdown the game? Is it something that you would think that you'd maybe include more in your playgroup, or something that they would be so opposed to that it's, nah, nah, never do that. We're just playing cards and going for it each time. We'd
love
to know.
What do you think about Blood Moon? And why do you hate it?
Yeah, Blood Moon, yeah. Yes or no? Hit us up.
I just
want
to hear why you hate it. If you like it, then just don't.
Then don't say
it. Just shut up. Just stay out of the comments. Yeah,
yeah. Find something else to talk about, right? Don't talk about Blood Moon if you enjoy it at all whatsoever. Big shout out to cardkingdom.com/command zone. Again, that is our affiliate link. If you want to buy any of the cards that we talked about today, sans Blood Moon or ways to remove Blood Moon, that's the best place to do it. They have the best graded cards on the market. They're also super fast with their shipping. Their customer service is top notch. Anything that you want in the Magic space, you're going to buy it anyway, right? Sealed products, singles. Go to cardkingdom.com/command zone. By doing so, you support our show and everything that we do here at the Command Zone.
Yeah, and when you get a hold of all those cards, you want to keep them in really good condition. You want them to be looking awesome, too. So maybe check out these new Eclipse Pro Gloss sleeves from Ultra Pro. These are the ones that are really going to show off your foils really cleanly, the vibrancy of your cards. Also, they have the brand new Mythic collection with the nice stitching. And also, it has like a nice stitched Planeswalker symbol on it. It looks super classy. They have a bunch of different styles of deck boxes and stuff. Mythic collection from Ultra Pro. Definitely worth checking out. All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Jesper, do you have anything cool to talk about?
Yes.
All right.
Or at least it's cool to me. Bird watching.
Oh. It's funny. We were just talking about this with somebody. I forget who.
I took it up again because during the beginning of the coronavirus, you weren't able to see anyone.
Right.
But
right.
You can see birds. So I would take my son with the binoculars out in the wild and start looking at birds, and we had so much fun.
Oh. Do you have like a book or something that you kind of check to see what you're finding, what you're looking at?
Books, and I have a website. I check where the rare birds are, and then I go out with my binoculars and my son, and we find them. It's a fantastic, fun experience to have, and you're not spreading a virus. You're just going out in nature.
That's yeah, seems really easy to get into as well. You just go out there and look for birds.
They say it's getting really popular right now for those very reasons. Like, there's a couple of things that are getting popular: plants and growing stuff,
right? Right,
and then going out and doing bird watching. What's the coolest, rarest bird that you've ever seen?
The coolest bird I saw during the coronavirus is a peregrine falcon.
Whoa, the fastest bird on Earth.
It untapped five of your lands.
Exactly. And I saw that down by the harbor, and it was eating a pigeon.
Whoa.
So there was a lot of action going on there.
Yeah, the circle of life.
Is this helpful to you for your artwork?
Actually, this is how I started drawing and becoming an artist, because when I was 8 years old, I was a lot into bird watching, and I started drawing birds, just the birds I saw on my trips, and slowly that just turned into a passion for drawing. And actually, if you look back on most of my Magic card art, they will have birds in it.
One might argue that the biggest bird that you've drawn yet is this epic playmat, giant dragon.
Dragon's a type of bird, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, yeah, we totally forgot to mention it. Before we go, let's talk one more time about our epic play playmat. In fact, let's play that cool animation again.
Ooh. Woo! Ooh, so awesome. Jesper, this art, obviously, you know, you've got a lot of experience drawing these winged creatures. And make sure you guys all check out the Epic Play playmat on the Kickstarter right now. It's going for a limited time. And when it's over, it is over. And you don't want to miss out, because Jesper contributed a fantastic work of art to this. And you're going to want this on all of your tables.
I don't think we mentioned at the start of the episode either, the feeling we were trying to capture in this piece or in this image is that feeling you have in a game of Commander when you are crushing your opponents, when you're like, yes, I just made an epic play, I did this. You kind of want to feel like the woman on the dragon who's got her hands raised, and she's like, I did that!
I rock!
I'm awesome! I'm going to win!
Blood Moon sucks!
I think actually she just played a Blood Moon, and this is the way she's... She's tapping all the red mana for the Shivan Dragon's Fire Breath.
Nice. That's great. Yeah, she needed more red mana, so Blood Moon was the way to get that. Brilliant. I love it.
Conversation went downhill. All right, big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Craig Blanchette, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nahn, and Sam Waldo.
And big thanks, as always, to Jeffrey Palmer and Sam Waldo, who make the living card animations that sometimes live behind us here on set, or begin our show and end our show at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. You can find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG. And Jesper, where can we find you online if someone wants to tell you about how much they love Blood Moon?
You can find me on Instagram, and you can find me on Facebook if you are into that stuff. And I have a webpage, jesperising.com.
Great.
And you also have a book out. It's called Elsewhere, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's a collection of all, or not all, but a lot of Jesper's work. We're told that it is 4 pounds
wow.
of fantasy art.
Yes.
You can measure it in pounds. And all the links to all that stuff, if you want to find Jesper's book or just find Jesper, are going to be in the show notes.
Yep. Thank you so much, yes. Jesper, for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure. And of course, you know, we'll hope to have you back on again soon. Hopefully, we'll be able to get around your Hate Bear shenanigans next time.
You're not coming back on unless you take Blood Moon out of the deck, though.
I'll be back with my mono white super stack deck.
Ah, perfect.
Ruin life forever.
I'm sure the audience will love that.
All right. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Jesper. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for watching, and we will see you
next time.
Next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.